Now, more discussion of the issues facing you and your financial future. The Cyber Advisor, David Revelle.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the September 4th edition of The Cyber Advisor. And if you'd like to join the show, our number is 888-463-6748. That's toll-free, 888-463-6748. It's the show that brings you all things financial, a different approach to investing and the economy. Well, every Friday, just after this show is put to bed, the FDIC comes out and announces the new bank failures for the month. It's getting to be a number that's significant enough that I think we should take note of it. Announced last Friday were three more banks closing by the regulators, and it brought the 2009 total to 84 banks closed. One of the banks closed was Affinity Bank. It's based in Ventura, California. Affinity had total assets of $1 billion, deposits of $922 million, and branches in Northern and Southern California. The federal agency announced that, or estimated that the cost to the FDIC fund would be about $250 million, $254 million. And earlier that Friday, regulators had closed the Baltimore-based Bradford Bank, Minneapolis-based bank. Bradford is estimated to cost the insurance fund about $97 million, the FDIC said. And Main Street Bank was also closed. It had $459 million in assets, but there's no real indication of exactly what the FDIC believes that that will cost them. So both Bradford Bank, Affinity Bank, and Main Street Bank out last Friday, bringing the bank total to 84 banks seized this year. Well, one of the most interesting companies, and the company that the communication system which we communicate here at TalkZone.com, is called Skype. And Skype is a voice over internet protocol communication system that was written by some Estonian-based developers, Adi Henla, Prit Kasalu, and John Tallon. They developed this program, which was their company was purchased in 2005 by eBay. Now, eBay spent $2.6 billion to purchase them and then promptly wrote Skype down to about a $1.7 billion purchase on its books. On Tuesday, it was announced that eBay was selling Skype to Silver Lake Partners at $1.9 billion, so about a $200 million gain there for eBay. But the question is, why was this position taken? And that was put to John Donahoe. He's the chairman and chief executive officer of eBay, and he was asked by CNBC on Tuesday why exactly he wanted to sell Skype, and here is his answer.
Well, we're delighted by this, Jim, because we think this positions Skype to be successful in the future. And I've said all the way along, I've never doubted Skype's potential. I've said all the way along, it's a great standalone business. And the only question was there synergy with eBay's other businesses? And the answer to that's no. And so this sets Skype up to be very successful and allows eBay shareholders to realize great valuation both now and still have an interest in the company going forward.
For anyone who's ever been involved in a new venture capital position like this, it can be very difficult at these stages of a company's existence to, first of all, value the company, to figure out what's needed, and so on. I think what was happening here is, I think fairly much as Donahoe had said, that they wanted to set Skype up so financially it would be in a better position and that it would be the core investment vehicle for someone as Silver Lake Partners stepped up and did that. Silver Lake Partners has a pretty good history in the venture capital and high technology area. John Donahoe was next asked, well, how is the core business of Skype doing? And here was his response.
Well, I think eBay achieved quite a bit with Skype. Skype is a $550 million business generating 23% margins over $100 million, has 480 million active or 480 million users around the world. User growth grew 72% in the second quarter. So I think eBay's done a very good job of positioning Skype for the future. hey, what this investor group does, however, is just build on that and provides focus. And so Silver Lake Index Partners and Andreessen Horowitz are the top technology investors in the world, and they'll provide a kind of focus to Skype over the coming years that that the business really deserves.
Tremendous numbers, numbers that would make any venture capitalist drool, an increase in users of 72% over year over year, and a 23% margin, truly outstanding. In another economy, people would be drooling over this, and the logical answer in another economy would have been an IPO, an initial public offering. But as Donahoe points out here, that was probably not the right answer here, and here's his response.
Oh, not at all. Not at all, Dennis. We were going down the path of IPO. In fact, we had our S1 all drafted, and we'd already selected our bankers. But this team of investors reached out to us 4 to 6 weeks ago and put forward this potential structure, which allows us to realize our objectives of focusing eBay on our two core businesses, eBay and PayPal, position Skype to be successful in the future, and allows us to share in the upside. So we felt like it was a even better path than an IPO in the short term, because it leaves open an IPO in the medium to longer term, and we're confident the business will be more attractive and worth more.
We'll continue to follow the Skype story as it goes along, and I'm sure we'll continue to use it here on our broadcast and so on. But a very fascinating look into exactly what some of the hurdles are and for brand new venture type situations as they take off. Well, one of the most interesting people I think that shown up lately is Charles Ortel. He's the chief investment officer for Newport Value Partners out of New York. And Charles Ortel has taken on what can be a very nettlesome problem for people in the investment world. Generally speaking, the investment world does not like to get into politically charged areas. But we are in an environment right now where the government has taken in, the Obama administration particularly, has taken on new and different roles in this economy. President Obama himself has set some standards in terms of unemployment, in terms of economic growth that he believed that his policies would be able to achieve. Ortel is stepping up to the plate and actually evaluating how is the stimulus working and how exactly is the Obama administration and government in general, what is their role in our economy going forward? Here's his interview on Yahoo this last week on exactly what he thinks the stimulus has done over the last year or so. Here's Charles Ortel.
Well, I think it's an open question as to whether the stimulus has truly worked. In the first instance, I believe not very much money of the true stimulus.
That's true, only about 10%, right?
Has been spent. And, you know, when we try to fix a problem, it's important to understand what that problem may be.
Right.
In the private sector, particularly in this country, the private sector has been subjected to intense global competition. We have a schizophrenic policy in this country regarding employment. We say that we want to encourage private sector employment, but we pile costs and regulations and uncertainty and risk upon the private sector at the very moment when, because of technology, even small companies like ours can employ people anywhere we choose to want to,
right,
in any country. So we're pushing the cost of labor up in this country at the very time that it's cheap labor is accessible around the world. And how much sense does that make? So the one sector of the U.S. economy that has not been subjected to any real pressure in that regard is the public sector.
Did you catch that at the end? The one sector of employment in this economy that has not been subject to global competition has been the public sector. And incidentally, it's the one sector of the economy that's growing. While private sector has been shedding jobs, public sector has been increasing and increasing and increasing on jobs. Estimated public sector employment is to rise something like 500,000 new employees over the next 3 or 4 years. Well, I think Ortel has exactly framed the issue, and the question then becomes, of the people who need to pay for this, is the private sector strong enough to lead us out of the bad economy and to lead into a new economy? And here's what Charles Ortel said.
I think the private sector absolutely is the most vital engine in the world within America, and we need to, you know, stop this policy. There's a funny saying, you know, morale, the beatings will stop when morale improves. And, you know, the government needs to think carefully about whether it is pro-capitalism or anti-capitalism. The moves that this administration are making, in my view, are the most anti-market moves of any administration in the history of the Republic. And, you know, we need to step back and understand that wealth is a good thing. Creating wealth is a great thing.
Ortel says in another part of this interview that it is only the creation of wealth that will get us out of this issue. Current income levels on a gross macro point of view are not going to be able to be large enough to sustain the increased debt that we're incurring currently. He is exactly on the money here. And the problem has been that we're asking many people in the political class to help lead us out of an economic issue when those people in the political class do not have any economic experience. There's no background in terms of economic leadership here in Washington. Ortel calls them corporate crats. They accept donations but don't lead. Here's Charles Ortel once more.
Well, I think this is all part of this arteriosclerosis issue that, you know, we have a system where both parties sort of resemble one another.
Yeah, and on the, you know,
on the fringe elements of both, you have, you know, extreme right wing, extreme left wing. But unfortunately, in the center, you have corporocrats. You have people who are very happy to take, you know, massive donations, who are, like Charlie Rangel, unwilling to truly tell you how much money they actually get from the, from their supporters. And, you know, it's a system that really needs to be reformed. These people need to get out of the way of people who know how to actually create wealth because, you know, starting new companies that flourish. You take a company, for example, like Microsoft, which maybe you don't like.
We're partners now with Microsoft. Right, love Microsoft.
No, just teasing. But, you know, here's a company that started from nothing and has created untold billions of tax revenue for the government. We need more Microsofts.
Remember, this was a Yahoo interview, so the comment about you may not like Microsoft was really directed at Yahoo. But the question remains, and I think this is a wonderful question, well framed, and that is, if the future of our country and of our economy is to be positive, it needs to be the private sector that leads us into a better economy. And a good example of the private sector, as Charles Ortel says, is Bill Gates. How will the new Bill Gates, the new up-and-coming venture capital type firm that's just beginning, will they have an easier time in today's new environment or a more difficult time? If Bill Gates were here today, would it be harder or easier, or tell his ask? And here's his answer.
I think it absolutely is. There's you know, there is a question in this country now about whether it's a good thing to make money. And this is at a time where we have a massive debt. There's no way we're going to get the debt back in balance by taxing incomes. There's not enough income every year to do that. We have to create wealth in this country. Again, it has to be a good thing. And you look at this administration and in Congress, you know, most of them are people who inherited wealth who have never worked in the private sector and have no clue.
The income in the entire U.S. economy comes from the private sector, which the government taxes and then uses that for government services and so on. But it's the fundamental concept that wealth comes from the private sector, from new entrepreneurs like Bill Gates and so on. And in order to get us out of this malaise will require us making it easier for the new Bill Gates coming along rather than more difficult. Well, each week at this time, we'd like to take a look at the economic calendar. As you know, last week we were pointing to three or four things that we were looking at, especially on Tuesday, September 1, the ISM index, leading indicator index came out. The prior index had been at 48.9. Market expectations were for 50.2, and it came out at a very bullish 52.9, a real tick up in the ISM, a real positive indicator early in the week. initial claims for unemployment really flat. Last reporting quarter was 570. The expectation 570, and indeed it came out at 570. Same for the average work week, which we've been looking at for a long time. It's well below what we would like to see. Last month it was 33.1. The expectation for this month was 33.1, and it came in exactly at 33.1. Unemployment rate we talked about quite a bit earlier in the show. The prior month was 9.4%. The expectations, this is U1, remember that top line number, not U6. Expectations were for a slight rise to 9.5%, and in fact came in a dramatic rise at 9.7%, really a surprise to the markets. In this coming week, which is a shortened week because of the Monday holiday for Labor Day, we're looking at the following things we'll be looking at on the economic calendar. On Tuesday, consumer credit is expected to be announced. The market expects consumer credit to be down about $4 billion. The trade balance is going to come out on Thursday. Expectations are that it'll be down. We'll have a trade deficit of about $27 billion. Wholesale inventories are expected to continue to decline, a good indication of the quality of management here at business in the U.S., decline of about 1%. And the Treasury budget will be announced on Friday. Expectations are for $174 billion deficit for the month. Anyway, that's it for this show. Thanks to our producer, Randy, and all the people behind the scenes at TalkZone.com. If you'd like to contact me directly anytime, my email is dave@thecyberadvisor.com. See you next week, everybody.